And welcome to this week's episode of the Blank Page to Bestseller podcast. I am your host, Peter Wheatmartian, and this week I am joined by Colleen and KZ, just like I am every week. We begin this week's episode with our Biz Buzz segment, and in this segment, the three of us talk about self-editing tips, some ways that we have found self-editing projects are easier for us, some things that we've learned as we have self-edited our own works, and then we also talk just a little bit about some of the ways that, you know, self-editing can be challenging for us, and some of the ways that maybe you as a writer can, you know, work on your own self-editing techniques. Then in our second segment, I am back with my second book review. In this month's book review, I am talking about The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien, a book that I have read multiple times. So I hope you enjoy my book review of The Things They Carried this month. And I do also have a very special announcement for all of our listeners. At the end of May, so that is just a couple of short weeks away, the author's Voice is releasing our very first book called The Right Way, and we wanted to let all of you listeners know that the book is going to be up on Amazon for pre-order shortly. So once that is up for you to go and take a look at, I will post a link on our social media, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and I will also have a link in the show notes for whenever that book pre-order link comes live. It should be out later this week. If you are listening this week, it should be up quite soon. And without further ado, I'm going to send it over to our Biz Buzz segment. And welcome to this week's Biz Buzz segment on the Blank Page to Bestseller podcast. I am Peter, and I am joined this week, as I always am, by Colleen and KZ. And last week's episode, we talked a little bit on some of our own personal writing tips, and we touched on a little bit of what self-editing is. And so what we want to do this week is kind of dig more into what self-editing is, and by that I mean like some of the tips and tricks that we have as we self-edit our own work. And then we're also going to talk on a little bit of the next step in the editing process, or one of the earlier steps in the editing process, depending on how you go about it. It's beta reading, beta readers. So let's kind of dig into the self-editing first, and then we'll talk a little bit on the beta readers at the end. And I'm sure that will lead us into some great conversations. So I'm going to first off, let me ask KZ first, what can you kind of describe, or maybe remind our readers what self-editing is?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Glad to do that. And I think it's important, in a sense, Peter, probably all of us are going to be defining this a little bit, because self-editing is quite personal. When you're writing, as a writer, the idea comes to you. Where it comes from, I'm not going to get into that. That's a totally different topic. Mm-hmm. But the idea comes to you, and you sit down and you begin to write. Whether you start with an outline, whether you just start writing, you know, plotter or pantser, it doesn't really matter. It's always the same process. You start to write, and you get into a flow of writing, okay? Now, if you are, now, back up a bit. When you become a more proficient writer, a more efficient writer, okay, you will learn how to do a little bit of editing as you write without stopping the flow, the creative flow. And that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about self-editing. Every writer self-edits as they write to a certain degree. You know, whether you're writing with a pencil or on a computer or a word processor or in your phone, you do some self-editing right there as you write. But the key to self-editing is to not stop the creative flow, is to get as far into as as much of the full process of developing your idea as you can before you stop, and then go back and edit. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's a really great description of what self-editing is. So I'm going to kind of ask you then to kind of just maybe go a little deeper real quick. Let me make sure I have this correct and so our readers know. So self-editing is both when you're writing and the first time you read through it after you're finished with your draft. Is that correct?
Yes, it really is. It's a combination of both. The trap that some people fall into, and I have to admit, I think as many people fall into, is spending too much time on the editing as you're writing, and you lose the creative, you get so close into the detail of the writing that you lose the bigger picture and you lose your creative spark. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really important to keep that creative juices flowing. The other thing, then, let me just kind of ask for one more clarity bit here. So this is, when you're talking about self-editing, you're not talking about, you know, backspacing and changing a word every now and again, but more a little bit more deep in your writing process. Is that what you're, is that the meat and bones, meat and potatoes of the self-edit?
Yeah, probably the easiest way to think of this is okay, so you're writing and you've done like, you know, a couple pages and the phone rings and you've got to stop. Okay, fine. You're still in that creative mode is still there. You can still bring that back. Okay. But when you come back and sit back down, you start back at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And all you do is change all the words that you've already written. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by falling into the trap. Mm-hmm. Thing to do is pick it up where you left off. Mm-hmm. Maybe do a quick read, but don't change anything. Make some notes if necessary, mm-hmm. But don't change anything and pick it up where you left off.
Well, yeah, that's great. Thank you for kind of clarifying a little bit on that. So I think our listeners now should know a little bit of what the feeling is of self-editing. And I'm sure a lot of us, like you had mentioned, a lot of our listeners have kind of fallen into that trap at some point or another when they've been writing, that where they've stopped their creative juices and just let the editing side take over a little bit too much.
Yeah, and I think you'll see that both Colleen and I have our hands raised on that. Not all of us have done that. I think everyone has fallen into that trap.
Yeah, I've done that as well. Colleen, do you have something to add on to the self-edit side?
Yeah, I've noticed the more I write, the more often I write, which I'm doing more of, I'm learning that. In fact, yesterday when I was writing, and I go back and self-edit in the beginning, like you shouldn't do, because you do lose your train of thought. You lose what your flow is going to be. And you think, oh, I need to change this because it just doesn't sound right. But then you lose what your originality is, if you will, trying to make it perfect, I guess. And so I've been really paying attention to that. And I still struggle with it because I want it to be perfect before it even goes to the editor, which is not going to happen. You know, like it's not going to happen. So so I'm just really trying to pay attention to that to make it easier for me to get the chapters finished and just get them out to the editor instead of going back 25 times to, you know, then losing your thought and your originality. And I think that's where I've noticed most, you lose your originality when you do that.
Yeah, that's really, that can cause some issues when you're writing, because you feel like you're maybe saying the same thing multiple times, or maybe you're going over it so many times, it kind of loses its meaning when you're writing. You know, one thing that I think I have noticed as I write is, I think we talked about this a little bit last time, is when you kind of get into that flow state and you're writing and nothing can distract you, and you're right on track and you're going, you know, full steam ahead, and you're writing, and you finally come to the end of the day, you know, you close out your document and then you start up the next day, and the track or the trap that I think a lot of writers come into is, or at least I've seen myself come into, is when you start the day and you with an edit of some of sorts, you kind of lose your voice too, because you know each day you don't necessarily have a different voice, but you know the first couple paragraphs of your writing every day are going to, you know, be a little bit different than the final flow state writing that you have. So I think a lot of people kind of get into the trap of trying to make their voice match exactly as their last day's writing was. And then they kind of look up at the screen and they say, oh my goodness, I've lost 2 hours and I've only written one new paragraph.
Exactly. I found that yesterday. Really, truthfully. And when you talk about,
Yeah, KZ, I think you had some something more to add onto that too.
Oh, absolutely. When you're writing, when you're in the flow, everyone loves that feeling. Okay. And it's so frustrating when you have to stop, and you do have to stop. There are very few of us who have the luxury of simply sitting down in the morning and writing all day without having an interruption. It's really rare. It's a wonderful thought when it happens, but it's really rare. Even if there's no one who actually does interrupt you, your own mind interrupts you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So as you're writing and you're busy writing, you're thinking ahead, and all of a sudden, what'll pop up? It'll pop up that, what are you going to have for lunch today? Or what am I supposed to fix for dinner? Or, oh, did I remember to pick up that package? Okay, your mind will actually interrupt you. It's just a natural part of everyone's process of working. Sometimes I think our mind needs to take that break. Mm-hmm. Okay, so to me, the key is to stay in the flow as long as you can. And when you have to take that break, make a note of where you are. Mm-hmm. And if you can't note right then, as soon as you come back to it, make a note of where you left off. Mm-hmm. So that it helps you to keep and get back in the flow. Right, Colleen? Does that work for you?
Yes. And in fact, the other day when I was writing, that's what I was going to say, is just when I was writing, I was in such a flow and I was going and going, and I had a meeting to go to within an hour. And I was like, now I understand what these writers say when they are in the flow and they don't stop. They just keep going because they're in the flow and their mind's there. Because I started thinking, oh my gosh, when I pick this up tomorrow, I'm not really going to remember, and my flow is going to be gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be almost disheartening at some points, because you know how good the writing process was treating you when you're in the moment, you know, and you kind of find your way to get back to it. For me, when I reach those like end points, whatever they may be, is I like to highlight the paragraph that I was working on, or maybe a sentence that I was working on, so I know where to begin, because I can, you know, jump around between paragraphs and sentences where I'm working. But what I'll do is I'll highlight it on my Word document, and then I'll put just a note or two, or I'll say, see my outline to see where I'm supposed to be at. So that kind of keeps me on track when I come back, so I don't have to, you know, go back and reread everything.
Yeah, I always put in a double asterisk when I stop. And also, whenever I start writing for the day, I pull up my outline so it's right there, so I can go back and say, okay, what did I miss putting in, or what didn't I?
Yeah, and I don't always write in Word. I write in Scrivener more often than I do in Word. But when I'm working in Word, and I'll mention this because I think a lot of people do write in Microsoft Word, or in a program like Pages or something on the Mac world, I think that using comments, learning how to use the editing tools of whatever the software that you're using, whatever writing software you're using, learn to use the editing tools, because making comments, I mean, a comment's a great feature because it's there, it's out of the way. And you can make it as long as you want, but you have to learn how to use that tool effectively. I know in Scrivener, there's a separate, you can do comments, but there's also a separate sidebar just for notes. Mm-hmm. And I use that a lot of time. I'll tell you a trick that I use. It has nothing to do with self-editing necessarily, but when I write something that I know is really good, okay, I just got finished with this paragraph or this little scene, and this is good. This is really good. And you know it when it happens. Okay. You're sitting there and you start clapping your hands. Oh, that was good. Okay. It happens. So when I do that, I take that scene right then, copy it, and put it in my notes. And you know why? Because when I'm marketing my book, that is a piece that I can bring out as an excerpt. That's a part of self-editing too. It's a part that we don't think about, but it is a part of self-editing.
Wow. I love that little trick that you have of pulling out something that's really, that really stands out to you to use in whatever it is later on.
Yep. That's a good one. That's a pro tip, by the way.
So I know we've kind of talked a little bit about the writing flow state and not wanting to interrupt when we do self-edit, but when it finally comes to the self-edit itself, is there a tip or a trick that you find most effective, or maybe something that you use every, you know, whenever you're self-editing? I'm going to turn it over to Colleen first and see what she has to say on her like number one self-editing tip.
Well, I pull up, I'm going to, first of all, go back a second. I need to look into Scrivener because you both have said how great it is. But anyway, when I self-edit, I pull up a different document, and it's called my proof style sheet, because I want to make sure if I'm staying in the same tense, if I'm staying in the same person, you know, first, second, or third person, what I'm writing, that type of thing. So if I notice anything that I'm going to have to change, say, if I spell ebooks one way in part of it and ebooks a second way in another part of it, then I put that in my notes and say, check ebooks, be consistent, or names, if I have a question on a name. So that's how I like to do it. And then I read through it and I'll mark anything. And when Candy was talking about the tools in Word, you can use the track changes also. And you could put in, like, if you want to change a phrase or something, you could put it in like you want it. And then you can always go back when you're self-editing and you can either accept or reject the statement. Then you're not losing your original words. But if it's better the second time around when you've done the track changes, then you can accept it and do that thing. So that's what I like to do, is a couple of my tips.
That's a really great tip. And I think track changes in the Word document, or, you know, whatever word processor you're using, is a great tool for people to learn, because like you said, you don't lose your original, and you can kind of go back and see if this is a better or a worse way to use your words, or make your sentence flow, or you describe your character, or whatever it is. So that's a really great tip. I haven't actually thought of doing that when I'm self-editing. So thank you for sharing that with our listeners. KZ, do you have a self-editing tip that you'd like to share?
I think two, and they're kind of related, but not entirely. First of all, if you have the luxury of time, when you finish whatever you're working on, you're ready to go back and look at it as a whole again, starting from the beginning and going all the way through it, time. Mm-hmm. Take a break. Go on to a different project. Work on a different part of this project, okay? But take a break, at least a day. If you can put a couple of days between it, that's even better. I wouldn't go too far. You don't want to go months, because you really have lost it at that point. It takes a lot to come back into it. But if you can go even as much as a week beyond between, that's going to be beneficial, because it will come to you. You will then read it as a fresh reader. Even though you wrote it, you will have that freshness to your reading. And when you do that, by the way, not this time, but further down the process, make sure that you listen to your work. I don't recommend that for the first edit, but when you're editing maybe the second or third time, maybe after your editor brings it back, after it comes back from your editor or your beta reader, then at that point, you want to listen to it. So put it through an audio program so that you can listen to it. Then my second, and I think this might be the most important tip, is versions. I love the fact that you brought up the track changes, because I use that as well. But what I found from many, many, many many times of losing my work is the importance of simply saving the version. When I open up my new document to edit it, okay, I've just finished it, I have a new document I'm opening, the first thing I do, the very first thing I do, is I save that with a new name. And that's what I work on. When I'm working in Scrivener, I create a new, I just duplicate the file I was in, and then I have, and I date that. So I know which one is the one that I started with and which one is the changed one. That way, now, do I ever go back and look at them? Yes, I do. If I'm looking at, I like to track changes because then I can look and see, compare specific pieces. But if I have really messed something up in my editing, I can go back and look at the original and see where I was when I was on track. Does that make sense?
No, that's a great piece of advice. Yeah. Yeah. I love the different versions. I know, Colleen, when we're working on different, working with editing some of our clients' books, I know you really like having separate versions so that we can go back and see. I know we've gotten to the point where, we've not necessarily messed something up, but something gets confusing because we've moved something around or something has changed, and it's a lot easier to go back and say, oh, this is where it was, this is what we've changed, and this is where it needs to be. Colleen?
Yeah, going on that, what I'll do too is sometimes I forget to save it as a new version right away in Word, okay? And I might start making changes and I'm like, oh, darn it, I forgot to save it. What I will do is save a copy then and rename it. You can always go back to your first version and do the right now I'm not thinking of the words, but you can actually go back to the original version that you had. There's steps you can take in there. So then you do end up with both versions, the first one and the second one. So that's a good tip there.
Did you mean compare docs, Colleen?
No, I didn't mean compare docs. I mean, you can compare the docs, but if you go into Word, you can go to File Options, I believe it is, and then you, you go into File Options, and then you go to, is it Proofing? You can go back. I'm sorry.
You can go back a version. I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Yeah. Go back to the first version, and it'll save it without the new changes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Now you can. It's amazing what's technology does for us. But we do have to learn. You do have to take the time to learn how to use the technology. That is important. Mm-hmm. It really is. So
that's really great advice. You know, I like having the different versions, and I have a bit of a teaching background in my own life, and that leaves me to really treat the versions. You can almost treat the versions as your own teaching tool as well, because you can go back and see where you started and see what you needed to change later on. So you can kind of maybe you realize that you're using a lot of adverbs, or maybe you're using a lot of like bad sentence structure, or something that's coming across a lot of changes when you come through and self-edit. If you go back and you read your original document, maybe a few months or a few years later, you can kind of see, oh, wow, I used to do this a lot, but I've been able to grow as a writer because of what I've done.
I have one more tip that I think is one that can be useful, but it needs to be judiciously applied. And that is to take that first draft and run it through one of the word processing editing tools. I'll give you a couple of names. Grammarly is very popular. It's not my favorite, but it is a popular one and it does a good job. ProWriter, I think, is the other one that I like. And then there's another one. I have three of them that I use, and I'm probably not going to be able to remember the third one. But what all of these tools do is they have different levels that you can set for what you're looking for. So as a writer, you will become familiar with your, I don't want to say weaknesses, but they are your strengths and weaknesses, okay? And you'll learn what crutch words you use a lot. You'll learn the sorts of things, the sorts of words that you shouldn't be putting in there, like the word that or like the word get. those are two words that we're grinning. You can't all see us, but we're grinning at that because those are words that we look for right off the bat. So take that time and run it through one of the word processing softwares. And I think Colleen may have something to add here. Don't get bogged down, but get those extra words and those crutch words out of there and get an idea of how your level of readability is before you start editing.
Yeah, and there's a couple of tips in Grammarly also. I do use Grammarly pretty often, but you can set it. It'll ask you to set it for what type of audience you're writing to. If it's an informal audience, if it's a formal audience, if it's an expert, or if it's a non-expert, that type of thing. And so that can help you too with the voice, making sure you're reaching out or writing to that type of voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And the ability to customize those tools for what you want how it's going to make your writing better is amazing. It really is.
Yeah, that's some really great advice from both of you there on the different, you know, I don't personally use Grammarly or something like that, but it's definitely something that is a benefit to writers when they're going through their self-edit, I believe. I do want to kind of piggyback off of something you said too, KZ, about taking the time to break between your writing and your self-editing. I think about, it's probably been about 3 or 4 years ago now, we had a book club, and one of the books that we read was Stephen King's On Writing, which is his memoir/writing advice book, which is great. If any of you have read it, you'll understand what importance it plays in the writing world. If you haven't, I would highly suggest you go out and pick up a copy and read it. But one of the big tips that he has is he said that when he gets done with a manuscript, and granted, he's writing, you know, these books can be kind of, you know, 600-700 pages long, some pretty big books. What he does is he sticks them in his desk drawer and lets them kind of marinate away until until he forgets about them.
Yes. That's the phrase I remember too, until he really feels that he can come back to it. And I'll add on that, Peter, as a writer, I have books that I wrote when I was in my 20s. Okay. And that were never published. I mean, I was a different writer then and writing in a different world, but I have things that I wrote then, and I will come back to them and read them fresh and say, wow, did I write that? When I know I did. It is possible to forget what you wrote.
Yeah, and like you said, KZ, too, like, we don't all have that luxury. I know he has the luxury to sit and wait for as long as he can because he's got as many projects as he does in the hopper. So, you know, he's not going to necessarily be out anything because he has one book that he's waiting on, you know. But some of us who are working on maybe one project at a time, or, you know, writing is not our main gig, if you will, you don't always have that luxury. So I would, you know, say maybe not wait as long as the goat himself, Stephen King, does, but, you know, definitely take some time, you know, whether, like KZ said, I think he said, well, at least a day, but, you know, whether that be a day, a week, or a couple of weeks, just to let it sit until you can come back with a fresh mind.
Yep, absolutely true. Probably the number one tip I can give to anyone who is going to be self-editing.
It's so true. And, you know, I want to say, too, that it can be a little bit difficult, too, to go back and read your own writing. I know I face that sometimes. It's kind of hard mentally on yourself if you know, or if you're expecting, you're expecting what you do to be to good. You know, your writing to be good, your writing to be, you know, presentable and readable and all of that. But obviously our first drafts of everything aren't going to be perfect. So sometimes it can be a little difficult to go back and read something we did for the first time. But just know that, like we said, no one's perfect on that first time. So you can't expect a perfect document when you go back and read it that first over in your self-edit.
That's a good point, Peter. Self-editing is not critical editing. Okay. There is absolutely no room for self-criticism in self-editing. Bottom line, don't do it. Do not do it. Let somebody else talk to you about give you that criticism, and then you can, it's a lot easier to take, but don't do it to yourself.
Yeah, that's really true. And, you know, that kind of leads us into, a great little transition to our next little topic we're going to touch on today. It's going to be really short on this, but like you said, KZ, let other people give you that critical feedback, that critical read of your document, and don't put that on yourself. So one way that you can do that is through the use of a beta reader or beta readers. And so I'm going to let our readers know, our listeners know a little bit what beta readers are. So beta readers are people who go through your document before it's published to give you, the writer, feedback. You know, it's going to be, it can be very, very broad feedback. It can be very specific feedback, but the idea is that they're going to read through your manuscript and give you some suggested ideas, suggested changes, suggested updates. Maybe they'll say, oh, you were really, really in depth in this area, or maybe you had a character that you introduced in one chapter and by the, you know, six or seven chapters later, you forgot about them because, oh no, something happened and you forgot to, you know, continue his story. So they would give you some feedback on that. So let me ask both of you, have either of you really worked with beta readers before? KZ?
Oh yeah, definitely. The thing about the beta readers is there's a difference between a beta reader and a developmental editor. A developmental editor is going to take your whole project apart and work with you from the very beginning, from the ground level, and build it back up if it's necessary. A beta reader is exactly that. They are a reader, and they are coming to you with critique. Now, this is not criticism. It is critique. Mm-hmm. As a reader, they're coming back to you and saying, I read this book. I really liked this part of it. I read this book. I got lost here. Mm-hmm. I read this book. I wanted to know more about this. Okay. I read this book. Your tips didn't make any sense. Can you explain that? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what you're looking for in a beta reader, is critique. And they're going to catch the things that you're not seeing because you are too close to it. You can't put it in the drawer until you forget it.
No. Thank you for sharing that difference between editors and beta readers, because I know there are people out there who say you can replace your editor with, 25 really good beta readers, but I don't think that's really true. You can get close, but you're never going to replace what a developmental editor can do for your book.
Honestly, Peter, a beta reader is not an editor.
Not at all.
That's the whole point. They are not an editor. They are a reader. And that, I think, is the one thing that is important. But that doesn't take anything away from their value. The reader is who's going to buy your book. And that's ultimately who your market is, who your target is, who you want to read your book. So getting that beta reader involved early on gives you, the writer, a tremendous amount of power to craft a book that your readers are going to just consider unforgettable and recommend to everyone they know.
No, that's so important. Yeah, I agree, because I think there's a lot of power in what a reader wants. I mean, that's really, when you're looking at, these big top five publishers, they're not necessarily out there trying to find the best writer. I know that sounds silly, but they don't care if the writer's good or bad. They care if the book's going to sell or not. And as a writer, that's really what you need to work on, is how can you reach your audience and your reader better, easier, make them happy.
Yep, absolutely true.
Yeah. So let me ask Colleen this, because I think she might have some insight. So I know we've worked with some people who do reviews for books. Would you say that a beta reader is a reviewer, or are they the same or different?
Wow, that's good, Peter. I think the beta reader can be a reviewer. That way, when they do review it, well, then they would maybe go into your book, like if it's on Amazon or somewhere, and then they could put in a review in there of what they, you know, what they liked. That's a really good question. I think that they could be, but not necessarily. If they don't understand that it's not a perfect book when they get it, and they understand, if they understand that the formatting is not correct, or the last proof, the final proof isn't, you know, finished yet, then you don't want that to be in the review, if you will. But I think that they could, if they understand that, and then they, if they like the book, and that could be a positive for you to get a review. What do you think, Candy?
You're right, Colleen. That's exactly true. And there's kind of a double-edged sword on this one, because and I know this works because I've used it, as a multi-published author, you are going to have a relationship with reviewers. It's just a given. There are going to be people who become part of your advanced reader copy team, your ARC team, and they will come back and want to review your books again and again. And that's wonderful. We love that. And what's really great, though, is when you find someone who gives great reviews, but maybe, Colleen, is a little bit more critical than you'd like in those reviews, okay? That's someone, a lot of times, if you feel that their input is valuable, as a writer, you can go to that person and say on the side, hey, would you like to transfer and be a beta reader for me? Mm-hmm. It's a great way to find a good beta reader who already likes your work, who is committed to reading it, okay, and can still give you great reviews, and probably will suddenly give you all glowing reviews instead of critical ones.
That's true. Yes. Yes.
That's a great piece of advice and a great way to like build relationships amongst your readers. So I know we've talked a little bit today about self-editing. We've talked a little bit about beta readers. Kind of their similarities, differences. But before we go and wrap up for today, let me ask this. When you are self-editing and you are working with beta readers, where would you place this? Would you do this before or after you're working with an editor? And I don't know if there's necessarily a right or a wrong answer, but how in your writing process, where would you place these? Casey, I'll start with you because you are the bigger writer.
Okay, thanks. The more prolific writer, maybe.
That's the better way to put it. Yeah.
So for me, I do a lot of self-editing before it goes out of my hands. Okay. And the place for me to put in a beta reader is going to be while I have my editor doing the editor's first run. I don't often feel there's a need to do them separately. I usually do them simultaneously. However, if I have any questions in my mind about the fluidity of the story or things that if I feel like it's just not right, I will send it out to beta readers first before it goes to the editor. And I generally have two edits on my books, a preliminary edit, a good solid line edit, and then a final proofread. So those are to me, that's important. And that's in addition to my own self-edits, which are quite in depth, to be truthful, because I am an editor. So that's kind of the process that I follow, Peter. I don't know how yours equates.
Yeah, Colleen, I want to have you answer that same kind of question.
I think it's kind of funny because being an editor and proofreader, which I am also more of a proofreader, the final proof, but it can be a double-edged sword when you're writing for yourself and you self-edit. At least for me, it is, because then I want to go over everything, make sure it's all totally perfect, like I said in the beginning. And so for me, it could be a double-edged sword because I'm too critical in the beginning, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then making sure it's perfect before I would send it out to the beta reader or the developmental editor. So that's just what I wanted to say about that.
Yeah, that's really good. I know for myself, when I've worked with different writers, it kind of goes back and forth. Some writers that I've worked with have had three or four people beta read so that they can put their ideas in better order before they send it to me. But other times we've done it at simultaneous times. It's just the one thing you do want to be aware of is, and one, you're probably going to have a closer relationship with your editor and have the back and forth conversation so you can talk about what's good or bad. You don't always get that with beta readers. And two, you do want to just be careful that, your beta readers and your editors, if they, if you're working at the same time, you don't kind of get confused with, what's what, so that's kind of one thing to keep aware of as you're working through that.
Yeah, and I'll piggyback on that, Peter, and just add in there that this is all part of your writing process. And every writer develops their own writing process that works for them. Do I have the exact same process for every project? Pretty close, but not always. When I'm working on nonfiction, it's a slightly different project process than it is when I'm working on fiction. But the overall writing process that I follow, that I develop, the where I go from step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and out to the end is pretty much following the same order. But every writer has to develop this on their own. Mm-hmm. It has to fit into your life and how you approach writing. Peter, the fact that you don't use Grammarly or something like that to me is just like unbelievable. I couldn't do it. But I know you do. I know that's your writing process, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You have editors that you're counting on to help you to catch the things that you missed. Mm-hmm. Whereas Colleen, she being the editor, she's more likely to want to catch those things herself. And I fall someplace in the middle. I want to catch them all, but I've learned that I have to let it go. And that's mm-hmm. why I have my editor and my proofreader in there to help me catch what I miss.
Yeah, and I think the more I write, the more I start writing, that I will become less critical of my stuff and let it go. But that's just something you learn. And like you said, Candy, it's different for everybody. One size does not fit all. Just remember that, everybody. One size does not fit all. What works for somebody may not work for you and probably won't.
Right. Yeah. Writing is definitely a very personal part of your life, a very personal process that you go through. And, I'll say this, the first time you write, you're not going to do it the same time or the exact same way the second time around, because you're going to learn and you're going to find some more efficient ways to write. You're going to find some different ways to, get feedback, whatever that might be. So definitely, there is no wrong way to write. Just the entire point of all of this is that you want to sit down and write and do it your own way. So I definitely want to thank both of you for hopping on and talking about some self-editing beta readers, because, they are they're similar but different. And I'm glad that we were able to talk about both of these in the writing process and how they fit into the writing process. And I'm very happy that I think we've learned a few things. Each of us ourselves have learned a few things today as well. So thank you for joining us. And we will be back next week with another Biz Buzz and another full episode on the Blank Page to Bestseller podcast. This episode of the Blank Page to Bestseller podcast is brought to you by us, The Author's Voice. The Author's Voice is the premier online training platform for authors, speakers, and entrepreneurs looking to add a new revenue stream to their business. Whether you're an author looking to publish your book or an administrative assistant looking to expand your business by working with authors and speakers, we have the training programs to help you become a certified publishing professional. You can learn more about The Author's Voice on our website, theauthorsvoice.org, or please follow our social media at Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. You can find links to all of those places in the show notes. And welcome to the second installment of my book review segment. On my first edition of the book review, I reviewed Killers of the Flower Moon. I talked a little bit about the author, a little bit about the book itself, and whether or not you, as a reader, should go out and buy the book and take a read for yourself. On the second installment, that is this month in May, I am reviewing The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien. May is Memorial Day, and I wanted to take a little look at the stories that some of the soldiers and some of the people in the military face as they are serving the country. So this is a book that I have read actually quite a few times. I believe this is the fourth full time I have read the book. It is a great book that delves into a lot of different topics, and I'm going to talk about that right now. So let me begin first by doing a quick little introduction of the book. So, like I said, I am reviewing The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien. And I have read this book, like I said, probably this is my fourth full time reading through the book. I learned this book, or I took actually part of the short stories from these books I read in high school English class. I also read this book in the first year of my, it was a freshman seminar class that I took. And then I also read this book in the book club that Colleen and I ran a few years ago. And, you know, if I take this together, all the times that I've read it, this is probably one of my most read books, and I would probably also put it in probably my top five books of all the books that I have read. So that is a little bit about The Things They Carried. It was published in 1990, and like I said, the author is Tim O'Brien, and he is an author who writes mainly about his time being a soldier in Vietnam, and he has also written a book, a National Book Award winning book, a novel called Going After Cacciato, and also a memoir of his time in Vietnam, If I Die in a Combat Zone. And both of those books I have heard great things about. I have not yet read them myself, but I would suggest if you enjoy this book, I am sure his other books are great reads as well. So, this book is a historical fiction book. It is based around Tim O'Brien, the author's experience in the Vietnam War. However, it is not necessarily a true story. It is semi-autobiographical. Like I said, it's not a memoir. It is a collection of short stories, but it would not be a short story collection either, and it's not really a novel. So it kind of is a genre-bending book, but I actually quite enjoy it. A word that I learned as I was reading through this book and doing some research on it is the style would be called verisimilitude, which is where the story blurs the lines of fiction and nonfiction. And like I said, the main character is Tim O'Brien, but it's not quite autobiographical. It is very fiction-based as well, and many of the characters within the book, again, draw from his experience, his fellow soldiers in Vietnam, but it's not a strictly autobiographical retelling of anything in Vietnam or after they come home. So I think it's a very interesting concept. It's a very, it's a good read. It is a read that really draws you in. And what I like about it is that since it is a collection of short stories, it's actually really easy because you get to learn about some of the same characters throughout these short stories. However, not all of the short stories are necessarily like in time order or you know, contain the same character. So you do get introduced to a wide range of characters throughout the different short stories. But when you take it all together, it does kind of portray the lives of the men that Tim O'Brien and his fellow soldiers came across throughout their time while they were in Vietnam. So I think that's it's a very interesting way to approach the book, and I think it works very, very well. One of the main points throughout the book that comes up, and it kind of harkens back to what I was saying before, verisimilitude, which is kind of the difference between truth and fiction. So throughout the book, throughout many of the short stories, he talks about the stories that we tell each other, you know, as people. The stories that soldiers tell each other. He also brings up the difference between the real truth and the story truth. And what he says is that sometimes the real truth doesn't matter, but the truth that we are trying to tell in a story is the only thing that matters. I kind of think of this as like the story truth is the emotional truth that you're trying to share, and sometimes that's more real or more pertinent in your life than the real truth. Throughout the book, in many different points throughout the book, he does talk about this real truth versus fiction. And, you know, the first time I read through it, you don't really pick up on it. But the more and more I read on it, the more and more I look at the book, the more that really pops out to me. And I thought that was, a really interesting theme throughout the book. Also, I think this is a great book for writers out there. Tim O'Brien is a writer himself. Like I said, he's published many other books. He's also been a professor where he teaches creative writing. And so he does approach the book almost like a writer writing his own memoir would. But again, like I said, it's not really a memoir. It's it's a fiction book, but he does bring in the writing to part of the book, some of the stories that he tells. And one quote that I like that I want to highlight for you is this. It comes from the short story Spin in the book. As a writer, all you can do is pick a street and go for a ride, putting things down as they come for you. So he's talking a little bit about how he writes and how he tells stories, and this kind of goes back to what the three of us were talking about on the podcast in the last couple weeks. You know, if you are a... it's kind of my thought of as a pantser writer. So that kind of you sit down and you start writing and you go with where your imagination takes you. So I thought that was kind of interesting because I picked up that as we were talking about the different writing styles a couple weeks ago, and that kind of stood out. You know, sometimes those things happen. You know, you're talking about one thing and it pops up in something completely different. So I thought that was pretty cool. The next thing that I do want to talk about is the first story. It's The Things They Carried. It's also the name of the book, but it's the name of the first short story as well. And I think this is a really great short story that everyone should read, whether or not they read the full book or not. This is one of the short stories I read in high school, and it's very pertinent, I think, throughout time. And what I think is important about, I mean, this short story in particular, but the book in general, is if you go out online and you search The Things They Carry, there is a multitude of resources for teaching this book in classrooms, discussion topics, book club topics, things like that, that you should. I actually think everyone should participate in some way, whether it's just them answering the discussion questions to themselves or talk about this in a book club or some other forum such as that. But the first short story, The Things They Carried, was what I, like I said, read in high school. And I just want to share a little bit about that, as I think it is probably one of the better stories within the book. So there are, like I said, The Things They Carried is the main point of this story is that the soldiers in war carry all of the gear they need to fight, everything they need to survive in the jungles of Vietnam, but they also carry personal items and comfort items, and they carry necessities, and they carry things that are, you know, mission specific, and they carry a lot of things with them, but they also carry a lot of things within them, like their feelings, their emotions, their memories, their trauma, and all of the not physical things that come with being a soldier in war. And, you know, I think that it really sets the stage for the rest of the book because, you know, again, like the truth versus fiction, it's kind of like the what they carried outside plus what they carried inside them. So I think it's a really great way to start the book, and I think it really sets the tone for the future chapters in the book. And then, you know, finally, what I do want to just talk about is that, you know, the book is never going to replace the feeling of being in war as a soldier. But, you know, like I said, and like he mentions too, the story truth can sometimes bring out the sense of what the soldiers went through and be more real in the sense of telling the story than the real truth that actually happened. And I do want to leave with this one quote. Stories are for joining the past to the future. Stories are for eternity, when memory is erased, when there is nothing to remember but the story. So, you know, as I talk about the story here, I do want to just kind of suggest that everyone go out there, pick up a copy of the book, read the book, even just read the short story. I'm sure you can find some of that out online, and take some time, talk about it with other people, find a forum that they're talking about the book on, or just answer the questions yourself, or, you know, bring them to a book club if you have a book club, something like that. But I do think this is a book that everyone should read and should really showcase, and hopefully we can all learn a little bit, you know, some of the story truths that are out there. So again, like I said, please go out, read this book. I highly suggest this book. Like I said, it's one of the books that I've probably read the most in my time. So that is my review on The Things They Carried. I do want to just kind of point out that next month is June, and June is usually a time when many of us start going out to do different vacations, going out on, you know, traveling, things like that. And one of the biggest things that people talk about in the summer months are quote-unquote beach reads. I'm not going to go into what a beach read is right now, but we do have a podcast episode planned at the end of May where we will talk about what beach reads are and some more beach read things. So I thought, hey, why not go and review a beach read for June? And what I'm going to do is I am going to review Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn book, his first book in the series, for my beach read for June. So please keep an eye out for that book review coming out the first week of June. And with that, I will leave you to go out and buy and read your own copy of The Things They Carry. The Blank Page to Bestseller podcast is a production of The Author's Voice. I have been your host, Peter Wheatmartian, and I want to thank KZ and Colleen for joining me on this episode to discuss all things writing, publishing, and speaking. Do you have questions about today's topic or would like to be a guest on a future episode? You can learn more about The Author's Voice on our website, theauthorsvoice.org, or send our team an email at info@theauthorsvoice.org. You can stay in touch with Candy, Colleen, and Peter through The Author's Voice on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Links to all of those can be found in the show notes. If you have enjoyed the episode, please be sure to subscribe and leave a review on the podcast app of your choice. Also, please help us spread the word about the Blank Page to Bestseller podcast by sharing the episode on your social media or by introducing a friend, a colleague, an author, or anyone who would enjoy the discussion to the show.